And they should fight every week. There should be head-to-head every week. NXT, look, WWE and AEW should have one show where on a weekly basis, it's constantly this. Just like they were doing back in the day on Wednesdays when all of this started, when AEW announced that they were going to be on Wednesday nights and then NXT suddenly moved to Wednesdays, right? Made its big debut on USA Network. And look what happened. Look what happened on Title Tuesday, on NXT Mania, whatever you want to call it. Just tremendous stuff. And it got both sides excited. It got both sides of fans excited. Whatever you decided to watch on Tuesday, of course, this is the Dynamite review. This is what we're going to be reviewing. But, you know, the context of within all of this is tremendous. We have to talk about it. We have to mention this. Like, whatever you were watching on Tuesday night got you excited. It got you excited for the reasons that make you a fan of that product. Dynamite last night was tremendous. It was an awesome, awesome show, which again reminds us of all the reasons why we love AEW Dynamite in the first place. And I'm sure AEW fans were satiated with last night's, I'm saying last night because we record this the next day. Today's the Wednesday. It's a special edition, all of that, because we did it. I usually do these on Thursdays. I'm straying from the point here. We'll get to that in a second. But I'm sure NXT fans were WWE fans were satiated with what happened last night. You got all the big names, all the stars, and legitimately this time, all the stars showing up. And fucking Undertaker coming into the, you know, destroy a guy. And, you know, everything that WWE fans love about the product was highlighted last night. And everything that AEW fans love about the product was highlighted last night. It's only pure dopes. Like, the purest form of bozo who cannot comprehend how good competition is in pro wrestling. How the status quo stinks. And we had proof of it last night. It was exciting, regardless of what side of the fence you're on, regardless what you decided to watch. You had a fantastic time. I'm sure NXT hit everything. I'm going to catch up with it because I do want to talk about this on the podcast next week. So I am going to watch it. Haven't had a chance yet. I watched Dynamite from the 0 hour thing right up to the end. That's what we're talking about today. The Dynamite review on the Mr. Warren Hayes Show podcast stuff. Pro wrestling. How you doing? I'm Warren Hayes. Welcome. Hopefully this is not your first time here. I'm sort of talking as if, you know, I started this one off as if you're bumping into each other in the lunchroom. It's like, hey. You know, but, you know, in case it's your first time here, welcome. I am Mr. Warren Hayes, and this is the Dynamite review. We do this typically every Thursday, but special day, special presentation night of Dynamite means special presentation day of the review, which I do typically the next day. So today is Wednesday after Tuesday. Here we are. And we are going to be talking about Title Tuesday, which happened on October 10th. 2023, from the Cable Dahmer Arena in Independence, Missouri. Thank you for being here. Leave a like if you're watching this on YouTube. 5-star reviews, Apple Podcasts, 5-star ratings on Spotify. Look, I wouldn't be constantly hammering this home if it didn't have a legitimate impact on the growth of the podcast. I'm just saying. That's a little, just tiny little bits you can do here and there to help out those. That's fantastic. But yeah, it happened. I'm recording this before the discourse gets overrun by ratings, which will be released later today. I'm doing this over lunch. So I don't have the ratings info, and this is not typically what we chat about here, besides Brandon Thurston and John Pollock. Later on today, if you're listening to this on Wednesday, they're going to be breaking down the ratings the minute that they come out. on a live broadcast. So you should tune into that. My analysis at this point is secondary, is tertiary. I want to talk about the show, but before the discourse gets permeated by ratings talk, look, I still think, you know, I'm going to put this out here, but I still think Dynamite's getting smoked. And, you know, despite the fact that it was a great show, I still think Dynamite is going to get trounced in the ratings. That's still my feeling. You know, moving from one night to another night is immediately off the bat, that's bad news. It's bad news for your show. You know, that's a loss of viewership right there. You know, and if we see how Collision behaves when there's NXT pay-per-views or WWE pay-per-views on Saturdays, you know, Collision always eats it in the ratings when that happens. So I think there's a lot more crossover. There's a lot more fans. There's a lot more crossover amongst fans than we seem to believe that we're led to believe. In any extent, considering that is what I'm trying to say. Considering that little bit of information, if NXT is loading up on a Tuesday night, well. That's what, you know, that's what you do. It might prove to be bad news for AEW in the ratings, but I'll be damned if AEW didn't do everything in its power to stock up, right? To do the thing. And here's something very interesting that I want, you know, that I want to put out there. Like I've mentioned it, but I think it's very apropos even today to bring this up again. It's interesting how, you know, most weeks on Dynamite, when I'm sitting here and I'm going, well, you know, there's a lot of, you can feel a lot of sports entertainment seeping in, right? There's a lot of talk segments. You get the vignettes. You know, there's a lot of this going on. But when you stick to, but, so there's a lot of this that happens on a weekly basis, right? But AEW, when it's time to deliver, when it's time to go head to head, when it's time to pull a big night, a big rating, a bit whatever, what do? They don't fill the show with talk segments. They don't fill the show with vignettes. They go straight for the wrestling. They go straight for wrestling, big matches, people who can deliver in these spots. That's what we got. Shit happening. Great promos on top of that. We're not losing ourselves in all these storylines and wacky ass angles. We go straight back to the basics. Now, isn't that interesting? In a company where, you know, I'm told, you know, it's where the perception at the very least is, oh, they're leaning more into sports entertainment to get the sports entertainment people in. We get casual fans, you know, the casual fans, of course. You always got to appeal to those. Bringing in, trying to get other viewers. Oh, the bloodline angle is so successful. AEW has to replicate that. And yet it's interesting that when it's time for AEW to put its best foot forward, to be in a position to compete, to do what they do best, right? Like last night. They don't bury us in angles. They just give us wrestling. They focus on top tier wrestling matches with top tier talent. Isn't that interesting? It's as if AEW knows what they do best, but they're being jerked around. There's people saying things and trying to push, you know, different ways of doing things. But yet, when it comes down to it, when Dynamite shines, when AEW shines, when Collision shines, when they shine in pay-per-view, is not because of the angles, not because of the overwrought stories. It's just focusing on pro wrestling. Hunkering down and delivering big-time matches and getting big-time matches that are good to great to even excellent. Isn't that interesting? And you can see it, look, straight off the bat, right? When the show starts, we're going to talk about the Zero Hour, but I just, you know, bear with me here just to make this point. The show starts with a match. Sure, you get the Christian Cage cold open. Okay. But the first thing that happens really on the show is a match. And it's Danielson and Swerve. Out the gate. What did WWE program? A promo. Cody Rhodes, Dragunov, Dominic. That was quarter hour one. Now, I'm not going to sit here and bitch about it. First of all, I didn't watch it. Didn't watch the whole thing. We'll talk about this next week. But right here, right then and there, you see the difference in these two companies. You see the difference in the two audiences. Starting off with a Cody Rhodes promo, then with Dominic and Ilya Dragunov. That is the quintessential way to kick off a WWE programming, because that's what the audience wants. That's what they want. On the flip side, AEW starts with a hot fucking match. Dynamite starts with a hot fucking match, which is usually, typically what they do. And I think right then and there, that is the major difference. You can see it from the way they both started off their shows. That is the quintessential difference between both companies and from what expectations their respective audiences have. I'm sure no one in NXT, no one watching WWE was like, God damn, starting off with another promo. No one says that anymore. If AEW had started off with a promo, I would have thought that was weird. I would have been like, ah, you're missing the boat here. No, here we go. Kick-ass match. Yes, there was the Christian Cage thing, but it was short. And it was a cold open. It was just like something, okay, let's move into this. And then we got into the match. So you see right there the differences between both viewership, between the philosophies in pro wrestling by these two organizations. It's not even the same thing, not even remotely the same. So it's, you know, ultimately, the shows were very representative about what they do and what they do best. WWE trots out the stars, brings out the big names. You know, NXT felt like a mini Monday Night Raw last night. And Dynamite, well, pulled out all the stops, felt like a big time Dynamite, pay-per-view quality, you know, supercard level stuff. I'm telling you, this was built, that Dynamite did everything they could in their power to swing often and swing hard. They were like, listen, if we're going to lose, we're going to lose swinging, doing our best, putting our best foot forward, because the opposite would not have been acceptable. But they came out, you know, the 0 hour, the 11 minute overrun, and then, yeah, we're going to do the first 30 minutes without any commercials either. Oh, and by the way, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, y'all are bald assholes. Tony Khan, yeah, he was tweeting through it. He's a poster. He's always online. Tony's online. I thought it was tremendous. This is the kind of chaos when I tell you all, embrace the chaos in pro wrestling. Don't go around going, oh, he shouldn't be doing this. Like, who cares? Who cares? What is your vested interest in how Tony Khan behaves online if he's just shitposting? He's shitposting. It's a different story if he's going out and, you know, insulting people, making fun of marginalized groups. You know, y'all are still on Twitter as far as I can tell, and you can still endure Elon Musk, but yet you're going to get mad because Tony Khan is like, calls Triple H, you know, drops some memes, you know, takes a shot at Vince McMahon. Let's go. Let's fucking go. This is the kind of chaos I sign up for when I watch pro wrestling. This is the kind of shit that I adore. This is the shit that we've missed. I was so stoked about all of this. Every time someone would drop into the Discord, which you should join, by the way, the link is in the description, and drop a new Tony Khan tweet, I had a huge smile. I was like, it's fantastic. And the number of people getting mad at it is like, good, you're getting worked. You're getting worked. The promoter is out there promoting. And you're and it's ex, and it's it, it, it's evoking emotions in you. Fantastic, you're doing it right. He shouldn't conduct himself that way. Well, get off of Twitter. Like hold yourself to the same standard. I can't support this. I can't support Tony Khan. Well, then it says a lot about you if you're still, if you're saying that and you're still on Elon Musk's Twitter. I'm just saying. Anyway, as far as the business aspect of it, because I'm going to, you know, I'll talk about this on Tuesday again. But at least we got these thoughts out. According to WrestleTix, the final count at the Cable Dahmer Arena, 3,621 tickets were distributed. That is the lowest attendance from all of AEW's history in the building. The last time they were here, which was in March, 3,912. So, you know, a 300 drop isn't necessarily, you know, it's not necessarily a disaster. And in fact, it's 3,621, despite being the lowest attendance in that building, it's still around the average that they have for the building. The highest attendance that they had was on was in August last year for a Dynamite, 4,357. Other than that, it goes back to 2021, 3,914, and in 2023, 3,700. So, you know, it's the August Dynamite of last year was clearly a high. Everything else is sort of like in the same waters. I mean, I'm sure that they were like, oh, well, okay. You know, it's not that huge a drop. Like it's a 300, you know, 300 or so less than when they were here earlier in 2023. But don't get me wrong. Like these, you know, attendance numbers are still not great. You know, this is average, par for the course for AEW these days, but it's still overall not great. Anyway, let's get to talking about what happened. Of course, there was the 0 Hour show that was broadcast on YouTube, where you had Renee and RJ City hosting and doing the, you know, the panel stuff. The Wrestle Aunts were there, but of course, you know, as much as we enjoy Renee, as much as we enjoy RJ City. We were here for Eddie Kingston successfully retaining the Ring of Honor World title and the strong openweight title against Minoru Suzuki. This was exactly what you thought it would be. Tremendous showing of grit and just chest busting. Suzuki, I think he probably caught a red eye flight out of Tokyo, right? He was wrestling on Monday. He was in Tokyo on Monday. In the he was you know, in the Ryogoku show at Sumo Hall, and then next thing you know, he's in North America. They're announcing him. So it's like, you know, did he get the call during the match? Like how that happened very quickly. Anyway, Eddie retains. His feud against Japan continues. Eddie Kingston versus Japan feud of the year. Just tremendous stuff. It's exactly what you thought it was. I enjoyed it. I'm a simple man. I enjoy this kind of stuff. One more chop each after the match. They hug. And again, Kingston leaves the ring to his Japanese compatriot, left it to Suzuki, and he left. Then Eddie Kingston on his way out drops in on commentary, right? And he tells us not to be idiots and watch Dynamite. Don't be idiots. Tony Schiavone is backstage. He's with Tony Khan. They announced the unfortunate news that John Moxley wasn't cleared for the international title match tonight. Hook pops in with Orange Cassidy and he says, why don't you put Orange in his place? You know, he never got his rematch. And Orange's like, sure, whatever. And Tony's like, oh, well, if you're not sure. And Orange's like, no, I'll do it. And then Tony eats a chip and they wish him a happy birthday. It was Tony Khan's birthday yesterday. I know a lot of people were bothered by the social media stuff, but I, you know, why wouldn't Triple H do that kind of stuff? And, you know, anyone who's trying to take a high road with Vince, you know, Vince would never do this. Vince took out fucking full pages in the New York Times, full page ads to shit on Ted Turner. And then he, you know, not just that, I'm pretty sure that ad showed up in other, not full pages, but in other forms, in other newspapers across the country as well. So who cares? Like, this is, who cares? Who the fuck cares? Why are you so bothered by this? If you're bothered, if you're not, good. But if you are, I don't know why you're bothered. Embrace it. This is fun. This is fun. It's wrestling. Get into it, as someone would say. But back to the John Moxley thing. So I think we need, I think this has to be addressed, right? Because there's a lot of people who have, who took umbrage to the fact, hey, you know, maybe they should have announced that John Moxley wouldn't be on, you know, wouldn't be on the show, wouldn't be competing, so on and so forth, you know, a bait and switch, swerve, etc. First of all, it was announced before the show. Like, if we're being very, very pedantic about it, because these are the types of arguments that people get really, really pedantic on, it was announced before the show. That's one thing. I'm kind of like, I kind of think it's a little scummy to do that. I agree. But I'm not sure that in Tony Khan's shoes, with everything that's being on the line here, with everything that he's been tweeting through, everything that he's been announcing, put together, you know, the overrun, the 0 hour, the 30 minutes commercial free. I don't think I would go on social media before the, you know, in the afternoon, same day, and say, John Moxley's not cleared. Because then that takes over the discussion. That takes over the discourse. And then people, that's all they talk about. And then we forget everything else. Big L for EW and all this bullshit. And here's the thing. If they had, they just switched over back to Orange Cassidy, who is a proven value, tremendous wrestler. I don't know if anyone is truly mad. If they had, nothing against Brian Cage. I love Brian Cage. But Brian Cage is not a Orange Cassidy, John Moxley type of star. Are we in agreement with, we have to be on agreement with the statement before moving forward, but I think that's a safe assessment. If they had pulled out Brian Cage to fill in the shoes, or, you know, Action Andretti, or you're like, oh man, oh, now you can be like, yeah, this fucking sucks. But you're getting Orange Cassidy instead, coming in doing an unannounced match, and you're sitting there and you're going, okay, well, there you go. We're, you know, he's winning the title regardless. Like, we're dropping the title. Clearly the plan was to get the title off of Phoenix tonight, last night. That's what happened. So, yeah, you know, this is the kind of promotional move where I'm like, something should have been said before the start of the show, despite the fact that something was said before the start of the show. And I think Tony was smart. Like I said, I don't know if I would have done any different. I honestly don't. Same situation, same shoes, same head-to-head on Tuesday night, having put together, you know, calling in favors, asking TBS for all these special things. I'm not sure I would have taken to Twitter and say, one of my top guys is not going to be there. That one of the top guys I've been advertised, that I advertise, is not going to be there. I'm not sure I would have done it. Keep the, from a public relations standpoint, from a pure communication standpoint, you keep everything on track, on message. We're talking about the big show tonight. We're talking about all these great matches, the head-to-head, you know, Tony's tweeting, all this stuff. That would have just derailed everything. And then announcing John Moxley like at 2 p.m. is not going to be there. Just would have derailed everything PR-wise. So I think it was overall handled in the best possible scenario, I believe. Would it have been better to announce beforehand? Yes, sure. But there was so much to enjoy on the show on top of that. Like, you know, Moxley versus Phoenix was probably, what? Let's be honest. It was probably like maybe the third most anticipated match on the card. Fourth? You could make a case for fourth. I'd absolutely make a case for third. I'd say people were more excited for Swerve versus Danielson and Copeland's debut than Moxley versus Phoenix, because I think everyone expected Phoenix to just eat shit in the match and John. Like, I don't even think it was the biggest match on the show. So So that was all on the 0 hour. Then we moved to the main card. As we mentioned, Christian Cage does a cold open in the truck. He says it's either he's okay with either Danielson or Swerve winning to be number one contender for the TNT title. Gives reasons for hating both guys, which I appreciated. And he says, you know, and then he puts over Luchasaurus for the main event. And he teases he might even cut a promo. Oh, gee. That's how you get Warren Hayes to make sure he doesn't switch his eyeballs anywhere. Tease a Christian Cage promo. We'll get to that in a bit. As we mentioned, of course, a little earlier as well, the TNT title number one contendership match happened, where Danielson defeated Strickland in an absolutely tremendous match. Here we go again. Danielson, look, I know there's a lot of people when it's going to come to their match, wrestler of the year ballots, that are going to probably disqualify Danielson for the time that he missed. But I would counter argue with this. The short time that he was in, like, he wasn't even in 3 months. Like, from June to August. Does that sound right? Yeah, June to August. Forbidden Door till about, 2 months. He's off. Other than that, his output has been tremendous. And he has been in a high... he's been in two all-time classics this year. The strap match with MJF. And the Zack Sabre Jr. deal at WrestleDream. Like, I don't think you can discard, even though he was out for 2 months, I don't think you can discard Danielson and his output this year, notwithstanding the great, great weekly business he was doing at the start of the year. And now, since he's become the guy, the collision guy, he's been on every week. He's pulling out these great matches, putting over guys, making Ricky Starks look like $1 million, working with Swerve Strickland here, and Swerve Strickland keeping up with him. God, Swerve is on a roll right now. He looks fantastic. His WrestleDream match was an eye-opener for a lot of people. He's in with Danielson, and he's hanging with Danielson. And you can argue, you can say, of course, you know, who's going to have a bad match with Bryan Danielson? Fine. I'm completely on board with that. That's an absolutely fair assessment to have. It's like saying, you know, oh, this guy had a great match with Will Ospreay. You're like, well, of course. You know, it's Will fucking Ospreay. What can he do with, you know, a sack of turnips? The fact here is that Swerve is showing. He is flexing his main event possibilities here. He's flexing his main event style. He's looking tremendous in the meantime doing it. This guy has always had the intangibles. I've been on the Swerve Strickland train for a long time. I still think his ceiling is world champion. And I think he's been showing more and more as we're going along that he has the work. He has the work backbone to make this happen. Because promos, character work, presence, like, the guy carries himself like a fucking superstar. And when he says he's going to be the first AEW black world champion, I believe it. First black AEW champion is how I should have worded that. But I believe it. I'm on board on this, and just tremendous stuff. He's so smooth in his, you know, in his grappling game with Danielson, transitions in and out of things. And Danielson in the match, he's selling his side, right? Of course, Swerve takes advantage of it. And Daniel, you know, and it becomes an important part of the match. This is what I love. That Danielson's selling it, but then he runs himself into the corners like he does, right? And he launches himself into the corner before running out. But, oh, he buckles as he comes out because he landed on his side, and Taz sells it as liver damage. Oh, that shit'll, you know, you take a punch to the liver and everything shuts down. I'm like, this is, God, I love wrestling. This is fantastic. This was great. So what happens then? You know, while Danielson is incapacitated, house call by Swerve. Swerve stomp, covers, Danielson kicks out, and roof blows off the place. Everyone is up on their feet at this point. Adam Page comes in to keep Swerve from using Nana's headdress, his crown, whatever. Keep him from using it in the match. And there's a little back and forth after between Swerve and Danielson after this, but a Busaikuni put Swerve away, and Danielson is now your number one contender for the TNT title. Apparently, this is going to go down a collision this week. So there you go. There's a great reason. I am not a hard man to please. Imagine that. Put great wrestlers doing fantastic work in a ring together. Give them a big time match. That's all I need. I am not hard to please. I know a lot of people think that I am. What I don't like, I really don't like. That's all. But this, there was nothing to dislike here. This ruled. Great match. And Swerve is on a roll. And you see later on in the evening, Adam Page loses and they're still feuding. So they're still on the same footing. I don't see an issue here. The feud, the program right now is still Swerve and Page, and they both lost big matches. It's sort of because of one another, right? They're still fucking with each other. I think this is good storytelling. I think this is very competent, well put together stories. And in the meantime, you're advancing other stories. Danielson is now moving on and his next challenge, he's going to be the next challenger for the TNT title. All this is moving along very nicely. We get another tremendous pre-tape of Samoa Joe, a vignette, I guess, who wants to remind us that he will be AEW World Champion one day. And again, but this is a guy that I believe. We talk about Joe so much being menacing and destructive and evil. Being destructive and evil. I believe him. Like, this is a guy who is in his promos and the way he conducts himself. He's believable. Like, this is a guy who, he can snap you in half and you wouldn't even have a say in it. It's like, oh, yes, sir. Then we get the Adam Cole vignette at Roderick Strong's house. I got nothing for you. And listen, I am not even going to spend, I'm going to spend a very, very microscopic amount of time on this because you all know at this point what I think about the vignettes. In case you're new here, they stink. It's not what I want out of. If I want this, I'm going to go to NXT. NXT's on right now. I had people in the Discord last night saying, I could take 2 hours of these vignettes. Oh, look, NXT's right there. NXT's right fucking there. That's what they do. Vignettes, and all the, let's go on makeovers. Let's go to the sushi restaurant. Oh, wow, sushi's so weird. It's all there. It's all there for you. I don't need this in AEW. And you know what? In the grand scheme of things, have you noticed that with all of this... Oh, wait, I skipped forward, but sorry. Have you noticed that all the tremendous stuff happening on this show last night, and even MJF and his bit of the angle here, was all so tremendous, it completely outshined this stupid vignette, this shit, this garbage that they put together. It completely outshined by all of the great pro wrestling happening, all of the eventful things happening everywhere else on the show. This shit took a back seat, as it should, because it stinks. It's for the other guys. And I promise you, like, if you're someone who's like, man, I wish AEW did more of this, there's a show that exists for you, and it's called NXT, and it's on Tuesday nights. Go right ahead. They had a lovely one with, Brian Pillman Jr. adopting, the last name of his abusive stepfather as some sort of reason to say that I hate my real dad. I don't know. I don't know what that's about, but I'm sure the the nice vignette. I'm very entertaining. Anyway, that's all I'm talking about, that because there's so much more to talk about, including this, and I apologize. I skipped over it. I guess I just wanted to get the Adam Cole vignette out of the way, and my subconscious was coming forth here, I guess, pressing forward against my, it's my id that was coming to the surface. Powerhouse Hobbs, we can't even say defeated Chris Jericho. He destroyed, decimated, overwhelmed, overran, overpowered, just dominated Chris Jericho for 7 minutes. And I don't know if you call this a match. I don't know if you call this an angle. I call this tremendous. I'd love to take a little victory lap here. Telling you all, QTV was a bad fit for Powerhouse Hobbs. They should dump his ass, get him out of there as soon as possible, because it's doing nothing for him. The minute they do, and they put him up with Don Callis, one of the hottest heel acts in the business, look at the magic that happens here. Chris Jericho, literal legend of the business, takes a whooping for 7 minutes. Cage match has it at 7:24. He eats 5 spine busters. I have spoken to wrestlers in the past. Most of them tell me that, you know, I think the most common move that people tell me that sucks to take our back body drops. And not far behind are spine busters. I've never heard a wrestler tell me, yeah, spine busters are fine. Spine busters suck. And this is a 50-year-old guy who has got nothing to prove, nothing left to prove in the business. In the ring, eating power bombs, world's strongest slams, and he loses, with minimal offense getting in. Oh, he mounts a hope spot, gets a code breaker, the walls. You know, he's trying to play the hits, trying to string things together, but nothing's working. Because Hobbs is too much of a fucking beast. And Hobbs pins him with a knee on the face. It's tremendous. And then we get later on, you know, why don't we jump to the thing right now? Let me pull it up here. You know, Renee Paquette, you know, she's with Jericho, who's being looked after by trainers. And Dan Garcia's there, coming in to check on him. And then Matt Menard comes in. What the fuck are you doing? We hate this guy now. Dan's like, well, no, I'm coming to check on, you know. They walk away, so there's a little something going on there. But Jericho is in a bad way. And later on, Excalibur tells us, I have the unfortunate news to tell you. And I'm like, when he said that, I was like, oh, Jesus Christ, what happened? Thank God it was all in story. And Chris Jericho had to leave the vicinity, go to a hospital. Look. I wish people would listen to me more. Because this is when I'm right. And I'm right more often than not. Hobbs in QTV is fine. They'll just, you know, keep him away from the silly shit. And, you know, no. This permeates. It sucks. It stinks. QTV is a curtain jerker prelim act. And Powerhouse Hobbs, they've been trying to get him over. They've been trying to make him into something bigger. Get him out of, put him into another lane. Here we go. Let's fucking go. I am all in on this. He's not fighting, you know, Wardlow or whatever. This is fucking Chris Jericho that he just decimated. Great work by Chris Jericho here. Just eat it. Again, right? And yet, you know, that we're going to get people who are going to try and continue to convince me that Chris Jericho is a detriment to the young guys in AEW. That he puts only himself over. That he buries the talent. That he only thinks about himself. Chris Jericho could have sat down at this creative meeting and said, this is not going to work for me, Oos. He really could have. But no. Oh, we're going to talk about the Jericho Vortex. That he doesn't do anything for anyone. It's fucking Chris Jericho. And he's doing this. And I'm still on record saying that Chris Jericho should get some wins. Because he's been putting so many people over. He's actually losing some heat. Anyway, wasn't against Powerhouse Hobbs, I'll tell you what. Orange Cassidy defeated Rey Fénix to become international champion once again. Two-time. First two-time, right, if I'm not mistaken. Right? Quick little high-octane match here, where Rey Fénix just continues to enjoy being dropped on his head. Tremendous, you know, including with that tremendous DDT, right, by Orange Cassidy during the match. Cassidy lands a beach break after Rey Fénix's back gives out on a move. Fénix has been selling the back and the injuries and so on and so forth. Orange punch, mousetrap, get the job done for Orange. Sub-5-minute match, just in and out. Fénix is probably still recovering, still semi-injured. He probably needs a little time yet to get back. You know, But this was quick, fast, in and out. Rey Fénix's singles run, we barely knew ye. So then they have a Toni Storm doing picture-in-picture silent film improv warm-ups. This is the kind of shit that I used to do when I did do improv stuff, and we'd do warm-ups and whatever, and you know, you're in an environment, you're doing this, and that's basically what she's doing. I know there's a lot of people who are bothered by this. There's a lot of people who really love this. I'm straight down the middle on this. Like, it doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me because it's not that big a deal. It's not a huge, all-encompassing thing. It is nonetheless a symptom of something, again, that I've been talking to you quite a bit about over the past few weeks, and how the Adam Cole vignettes and the sports entertainment, you know, if the champ is doing this, if the main eventer is doing this and he's getting 34, you know, he's getting 15, 20 minutes for his stuff per week on the show, well, more and more undercard people are going to want to do these things to get more time for themselves. There you go. Toni Storm is a silent film star, and she's doing this stuff. And good for her. It's fine. I personally kind of like it. I think it's fun. I think it's just, you know, mental snap, a complete mental breakdown. Yeah, I think it's fine. I think they lean into it a little too much, they being production. But it does, look, it's fine, and it's not a main event thing. It's firmly mid-card. It doesn't bother me. I like the shoe thing. I don't hate it because it's not taking up all my time. It's a nice, you know, just a little diversion. Okay, let's move on. There. Wardlow defeats Matt Sydal. 4 power bombs by Wardlow. Aubrey calls the match rinse and repeat from last week. Wardlow is mad, walks out through the audience. Then we get Jay White versus Adam Page. I thought this was a really good match. Of course, Jay White preys upon their past as they're being confronted in the ring. You're 0-3 with me, cowboy. It's telling them in the ring, right? They met in the G1 in 2018. White won. They did a Strong Style Evolve show in 2018. White won again. The Forbidden Door match in 2022 was a 4-way. Jay White, Adam Cole, Okada, Page. Jay White won. Hey, Jay White has been protected in this company for a long time when you think about it. He wasn't even signed and they were protecting him. But this was good. And, you know, all the big moves were there. And just some great action, expertly put together. Two fantastic pro wrestlers. Let's just, you know, call it what it is. Page pulls out the sack of shit, the running moonsault, and the moonsault slam off the top rope, which is always tremendous. Jay White does a dragon screw leg whip, and then he does the air guitar, saluting his old rival Hiroshi Tanahashi. And he even pulls out the TTO, the Tanahashi tapped out. He even did that. Great finisher. Great finish, I should say, when Nana comes to get involved and it allows Jay White to get a sneak win in another tremendous match on this show. Just great stuff. Top to bottom, just great stuff. After the match, MJF comes out and he's fired up. He's not doing cutesy things. He's not trying to get tofu over. He's not trying to get people to chant along. This isn't sing along with MJF tonight. No, he's mad. He's pissed off. He wants the title back. And here's something interesting. What was going on in the meantime over on NXT? Dominik versus Ilya Dragunov. Now we have this match. We had the end of this match and the champ coming out. And Max was all business. And this is my favorite form of Max. You know, make me feel that the title is important, because commentary was saying that. Jay White was saying that. But it had been a while since I felt MJF was really into the world championship. And yet, here we are. This is what we're getting here. They go a little back and forth. And Max, you know, he says he understands, you know, that he understands White because he used to do the same things he does, you know, surround himself with losers and sneak to win. But he's trying now to be a better man. So he wants White to do the right thing and bring back the title, which means the world to him. And he's talking about it, and I feel it. I feel like it's the real deal. Max was pinpoint, spot on. I missed this. Jay White says he appreciates him asking for the title rather than jumping him in his little devil mask. We're keeping that whodunit thing alive. But they got a match on November 18, so MJF can win it back there or fail. But he also throws in this. He says, look, if you can find three people who can stand you, we can have an eight-man tag if he wants, and then maybe if you win, you can have the belt back. We'll get to that in a second, of course. Robinson, Juice, he has his turn on the mic. He announces that there's going to be a Dynamite Diamond Battle Royal, which, oddly enough, I was thinking about just last week. I was like, are we ever going to do one of these again? So for the Dynamite Diamond Ring, of course, he says, I'm going to be in there, and I'm going to kick your ass. And he says, I'm going to win using this, and he reveals a roll of quarters with the word Friedman on it. And this pisses off Max tremendously. In case you're new to AEW, you're not quite sure of the lore. Max has told us a story in the past where when he was young, he was subjected to some anti-Semitic bullying by some dopes in high school or junior high, can't quite remember, middle school, who threw quarters at him and say, pick him up, Jew boy. And this is a story he's told twice at this point, if I'm not mistaken. And it's you fucking hate that kind of shit, right? And it's something that I've always been very sympathetic to. And now, Juice Robinson is bringing the quarters into the equation here. Now, in Juice Robinson has previously used a roll of quarters to finish a match. And it's a spectacular visual. I love the visual of the quarters just flying into the air. I think it's a great visual, and he's done it in the past. So for him to bring that up is natural to a certain degree. And a lot of people just dismissed it as, it's Juice's thing. But he hadn't really used it in AEW for being, but they're all like, it's Juice's thing. But commentary absolutely confirmed that this was linked to MJF's story about being bullied. And the reaction MJF had was absolutely justified and absolutely confirmed that as well. So it's not like, oh, it's just Juice's thing. No. They're leaning into the quarter story. We're getting ourselves a little anti-Semitism in our pro wrestling right now. This is essentially what it is. Now, I understand why people are upset about it. Honestly, I do, and I get it. It makes me uncomfortable. I like to think I'm sensitive to these, to inequality. I think there's some things that you have to tread. There's some topics and subjects you have to tread on with a finesse. And pro wrestling isn't exactly known for its finesse. So it makes me uneasy to get this in pro wrestling because I'm always worried about how these things are going to be handled. So if you outright hate it, I get it. If it makes you uncomfortable, I don't think a response of, I don't care, I don't think that's an appropriate reaction. I think you're meant to care regardless, right? And that's the thing, right? I wrote an article months ago when people were chastising MJF for saying like absolute vile, disgusting shit in his promos. I'm like, he wants you to feel shit. You're supposed to hate him. Well, I mean, we're not that far off here, right? And Max is very good at doing this. So, and by all intents, this is Max's call. He's bringing this into his story. Maxwell Jacob Friedman oversees his creative. And there's not a lot of people who tell him no in this company. I'll tell you what. I know for a long time, there's a lot of people who thought, you know, CM Punk could do anything he wanted. MJF wields a lot of fucking power in creative. All of this is his. So I can only assume, knowing what I know, that MJF is not only okay with this, this is his idea. This is him bringing this to the table. World events right now, current events, make this also a little weird. Like, it's all a little weird, you know? And I can't blame anyone for doing this, right? And my main sticking point, and I'm going to echo my Voices of Wrestling colleague, Suit Williams here, who, you know, when we were talking about it, and he also tweeted it out, he said, you know, and I'm paraphrasing because he said it much more succinctly than I could ever, you know, this is a business that has been built on, you know, has had more than its fair share of racism and misogyny, you know, and bringing out all the worst from people for decades, right? So I can understand why people are reacting very strongly and are not ready to give it a pass, even though it is television and even though it is a scripted event. And I understand because of the past of pro wrestling, of being exploitive, of the worst behaviors of humanity, I can understand that that people are not ready to consider this as, I'm all going to be okay with it, that they're a little reticent, that they're not quite into it. I'm 100% behind this, this feeling that people can have. But you know what? When it comes to me, this is exactly how I feel. So, you know, is it a good look? I don't think it's a great look, especially from the pro wrestling lens, you know. And you can, there were so many Schindler's List, and like, okay, but I mean, these are works of art, right? You know, in a medium that, you know, and were dealt with very delicately in a very compelling way and had a tremendous message. Here it's all, pro wrestling is all about getting yourself over, using whatever you can to get yourself over. So I can see, and I can see and feel why anyone feels a little weirded out about all of this. I really, honestly, frankly, completely do. Shida, as in Hikaru Shida, defeated Saraya to become the new AEW Women's World Champion, I should say. And I didn't see this coming. I don't think many people saw this coming. Tremendous. Like, I'm absolutely okay with this decision. And, you know, reinforces the idea that Saraya was just given a nice little moment, nice little defense last week or the week before, I don't quite remember. And that's it. You know, Saraya's not the wrestler that everyone seems to think she is. And, yeah, I saw people, oh, Saraya's improved. Has she? I don't know. Sheeta did good here. And there's Spray. There's Ruby Soho with Spray and Interference. And Tony Storm runs out with the shoe. Sheeta kicks out of the nightcap. Lands a Falcon Arrow. Two nightcaps, I should say. Lands a Falcon Arrow for the 1-2-3. And she's the first three-time AEW World Women's Champion. Women's World Champion. I'll get that right. Tremendous stuff. Good. Proper run for Sheeta. Probably won't feel as a placeholder or a lame duck or whatever. Lots of possibilities here. We get Don Callis backstage with Konosuke Takeshita, and they're doing the Sammy Guevara gimmick with the cards during picture in picture. MJF is with Renee backstage. He tells her that he's not in the mood for an interview because of everything that happened. And he just wants to call his boy and get some advice. So he calls Adam Cole, who picks up, wants advice for dealing with White, Samoa Joe, the old wounds. But Adam Cole is still at Roddy's and the connection's not good. The Acclaimed arrived. Max Caster offers up their services to beat Bullet Club Gold. Max doesn't seem enchanted by it. I think he wants his boy by his side. But right now, this is what we got. See what happens. Christian Cage comes to the ring and he cuts, guess what? A tremendous promo. And he cuts the promo I wanted to hear. Look, he gets his sports team heat, and then you know, he didn't like it when Copeland said that you know, Luchasaurus and Nick Wayne would just take all the information out of his head and then dump him. He says, unlike Copeland, he didn't take some people, dress them up like Halloween, and convince them they're tough guys, and convince himself he was the leader. Fantastic. He said, because for Wayne and Luchasaurus, he's not their leader, he's their father. Father of the year. I'm so glad they're leaning into this stuff. And he says it's funny because, you know, when he being Christian, was being disrespected and underused in the past, Copeland didn't turn down his push to team up together and make dream matches and bring the team back together again. No. He continued serving his audience of one. And that's exactly what I wanted to hear. This is exactly what I wanted. So Christian is like, I went off and I built myself a career on my own away from you. And you come in here and you're like, well, let's bring back the team. No, you just want to mooch off of me. That is exactly what we needed. Tremendous. Oh, and Christian, you know, he can't bring up the father. You know, he doesn't say much about that, but he does bring up Beth Phoenix. Says she's always been a big fan of Christian. And he tells Beth to put on clean sheets because he's coming home. Of course, Adam Copeland runs in and Christian Cage takes a powder. We get the match. I mean, listen. This match was meant to paint Adam Copeland in a good light. Give him his first win. Luchasaurus dominating him. You know, eating shit and whatnot. I think what it had to do, but I'm gonna tell you, I saw a very Adam Copeland WWE match here. This is what I saw. Saw a lot of big guy. You know, it's Kane versus Edge. This is kind of what I saw. So, you know, I told y'all last week, I'm telling you again, I'm still not all in on Adam Copeland in AEW. I'm still keeping an open mind. I'm curious to see what's going to happen here. But as it stands, you know, I don't think he's been a tremendous business mover. Right? Didn't pop a rating on Collision this week. Collision was a disaster, but of course there was the NXT, not the NXT, but the Fastlane on the WWE Peacock. And so there's that. There's also, you know, the idea that, you know, there's the idea of, you know, what kind of rating will he get tonight? Or today? You know, how will his main event quarter hour seem? You know, main event, Adam Copeland's first AEW match. How will that, like, I'm still not sold. And this match didn't sell me on him either. Where I'm like, okay, what does an unfettered Edge look like? Well, an unfettered Edge, Adam Copeland, still kind of looks like Edge. He still kind of feels like Edge. And he still kind of wrestles like Edge. But I'm not throwing in the towel, and I'm not, you know, I'm not passing judgment. I'm not saying the experiment has failed. you know, let's run this. You know, because at the same, look, Luchasaurus, no disrespect, not your top tier worker either, right? It's not necessarily, you know, the guy who can wrestle another guy up to his level. You know, Luchasaurus, he's fine. He's a solid worker, but he's not Mr. Spectacular. We see him work really well with smaller guys. He's tremendous, but I don't know. Match ends when Christian Cage gets involved and Copeland does a little lie, cheat, steal thing and clocks Luchasaurus with the TNT title while the ref is distracted. Luchasaurus thinks Christian Cage did it, which allows a sneaky spear by Edge, which, you know, everyone said, oh, that's the best spear Edge has ever thrown. And I, you know, when the bar's in the dirt, I guess, you know, when the bar's in the mud. And after the match, we get a huge schmod. And this is, I'm a simple man. Doesn't take much to make me happy, but everyone who had a fucking angle around all of these, everyone who came out for this huge schmoz at the end, all had something, had a bone to pick with someone. And that's how you know your stories are connecting, they're working. When you look at everyone involved here, everyone who got involved in this, you know, this final brawl, this WC Nitro-esque exit, everyone made sense. Everyone had a connection to someone else in the, just tremendous stuff. And you get Tony Schiavone, the last thing you see is Bryan Danielson cranking Christian back in the LaBelle lock, and you have Tony Schiavone screaming at the top of his lungs, "Don't let him go!" And we fade to black. And, you know, the only way this could have been better if someone said tape machines are still rolling. Other than that, tremendous. I thought this was a winner. I wish there was, as a Dynamite goes, complete win. And a W quality-wise from top to bottom. My quibbles are so fucking minimal here. Tremendous stuff. MJF back in form. A killer match to open. Great matches all throughout. Title changes. This is eventful. This is how Dynamite should feel week after week. Maybe Dynamite should go to Tuesdays. I'm just saying. Or move NXT back to Wednesdays. I mean, that's what they're thinking of doing, right? With the fucking, you know... Or at least that's not that they're thinking of doing, but that's a possibility. It's a rumor being thrown around. A strategy that WWE might have for the rights for Raw and NXT, that one of the two could end up on Wednesdays. I'm like, if this is what's going to drag out the best out of Tony Khan and AEW week in, week out, if that's what they need, because this is the Dynamite that we all fell in love with. This is the show we love. Not the stuff that we've been seeing for the majority of second quarter of 2023, right into the third quarter. This is tremendous. This is, bring back the wars. Bring back the, just have them go head to head every week if this is what we're going to get. And stop being weird bozos if you think that this shit is bad. Pick a side if you want, but you have to absolutely acquiesce that these shows, that last night, these shows benefited from going head to head. They were in full on competition mode. It was exciting. The output was tremendous on Dynamite. Fans win. Fans win. There you go. We're going to wrap it up for today. Thank you very, very much for listening, for joining in. If you're on YouTube, a like, last minute ditch for a like, or a review or a rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, those things help out. I will be back on Sunday with the AEW Collision review. Otherwise, back on Tuesday with another edition of the Mr. Warren Hayes Show. In the meantime, thank you all so very much for popping in on this specific, on this this unusual day, on this Wednesday, because this will be back on Thursday, next Thursday, right? I'll see you next time. My outro's a terrible.